We welcome to the program an award-winning author of some 15 books, speaker and a coach, a Forbes magazine top diversity and inclusion trailblazer. She designs cross-cultural materials and workshops based on the science of storytelling. She's got a new book out called Bunny Bear Adventures in Diversity Land. We are happy to be joined by Deborah Levine. Deborah, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you invite me to do this with you.
Well, you have lived a life, my goodness. You have had some adventures, to say the least, through the years, and I want to talk about those. But this book is geared toward using your own story to open the eyes of young people.
Yes, Bunny Bear, Adventures in Diversity Land, is an audio book that's available for all ages, but especially children, who may feel like they're different and don't fit in.
Well, I'm sure you must have felt that way. So I'll ask the obvious question here. How did you go from being the only Jewish little girl on the island of Bermuda to being a Forbes magazine diversity and inclusion trailblazer?
Well, in Bermuda, we were very British, and my family had lived there. We're the only family in the history of Bermuda, Jewish family, to have lived on the island for four generations. But my dad wanted us to go back to New York and be in a Jewish community. So we left the island. And you know what it's like to go from Bermuda to Long Island?
A little culture shock there, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it wasn't pretty. I got bullied. I got harassed because I did not fit in, and I sounded incredibly British, having been brought up to speak like the Queen of England.
Now,
it didn't go over well on the recess playground.
And so how did you navigate that landscape and find a way to make it all work for you?
It wasn't always easy. One of the things that I did enjoy doing was reading, and I have a picture of me writing when I'm still in diapers. So there were some skills and talents that I had that helped me through some of these difficult times.
And you've got such an interesting family story as well. When did you learn about your father's background as an intelligence officer whose job during the war and the post-war period was interviewing Nazi POWs?
He did not speak about it when we were kids. Occasionally, what he did is he left all these books around the house, like the Diary of Anne Frank, for us to read. And when I asked him what happened to Anne Frank, all he said was, "She died." He knew he weren't going to ask any more questions. But I found out more about his past when I took a job as the community liaison for the Jewish Federation in Tulsa shortly after the Oklahoma City bombing. And I was trained in security by the FBI, and my father kind of freaked out, and that's when I started to learn about what he had done.
Was it that inspired you to end up writing and creating a World War II documentary?
Eventually, yes. I did not realize that he had kept all his wartime letters and hidden away in a file cabinet in the closet. And as he got older and he started to share those letters with me and I got to read them, and it took a while to get through them. It was pretty emotional. I started to write. That's what I did at the time, writing a memoir called The Liberator's Daughter. At first, when I showed him what I was writing, he said, "It's coming along," which is my father's way of saying, "It's not so great, hon." So I had to work on it quite a bit. Eventually, I had published it. It got awards. I did a second memoir. And then I realized the world had changed and it was time to write a script and create the documentary about it.
We're talking with...
And he had passed away by that time.
We're talking with Deborah Levine here on Downtown. I want to talk about your work in diversity and diversity training and talk about one of the methods, which is storytelling. How How do you use storytelling, and how can all of us use storytelling to connect us as individuals during these pretty divided and fractured times?
They are indeed. Well, I studied storytelling as part of my major in oral history and folklore at Harvard back in the 1960s. And it impressed me so that it was a science, indeed, that I kept going with it. Using stories has been a way for human beings to make a point for thousands of years, and there's a reason for it. It has impact, it engages, it gives people a chance to think about their own stories, and it gives people a window into a different culture. And that's why I use those stories. And I created a process for developing stories and adding to that emotional intelligence and put it together so that it has incredible relevancy for today.
Is that the Matrix Model Management System?
Yeah.
Can you explain a little bit about how that works?
So this was created actually shortly after the 9/11 incident, because people were frightened and scared and angry, and we needed to come together. How is that going to happen? So the process starts with the science of storytelling. It adds to that the emotion metrics, measuring emotion, because you just can't tell people to feel this way or that. Then it adds the decision-making process to it. So it's sequential. And you go through it with teams, with stories that are created by each team, and they have fun doing it. So it's not so dark as many people think diversity training is. It's fun. And it gives people the opportunity, right, to grow the neural net they need for the big data that is diversity.
And so how challenging is it in the times we're living in to try and talk about, to try and work on diversity issues when that's become, in many circles in this country, a buzzword for something that people ought to be frightened about?
Yes, that's very true. And it is a challenge. One of the issues in diversity that I'm asked about the most these days is religious diversity, because people want to understand how diverse religions are going to get together and be a team or market to diverse religions. And that's a lot of what I do and have done for decades. So that is actually more in demand than anything else I do these days, with one exception, and that is teaching storytelling and writing and script writing, because people are always going to need that skill.
You know, when you mention religion, I am a high school teacher, and I've said for years that I'm not sure we always do our students a service, because, you know, whether it's in the wake of taking school prayer out, which certainly I support because not everybody shares those same set of beliefs. But I think schools went so far away from that that we don't give students the opportunity to learn about any religion. And I think in public schools, I don't know if you could do it in these times we're in, but some sort of comparative religion classes, giving kids the opportunity to learn about different faiths would be such a wonderful thing. It would help the understanding of people.
I absolutely agree. This is not a new issue by any means. When I was at Harvard back in the 1960s, and the dean asked me what I planned to major in, and I suggested world religions, comparative religions, I was informed that it did not exist, and that I should plan on majoring in English or economics like everybody else. I didn't, but that's another whole story. But the idea is it is difficult to teach, and how are you going to do that? And one of the ways in which I do that is simply by calendars. All right, what holidays are coming? What are people celebrating? What are they eating? You know, basic things like that. What food can you share with people? What are the dates? How about a little music? It isn't extremely difficult to resonate to some of these things and see what maybe a family is doing around the dinner table.
No, it's a wonderful idea. Can you talk a little bit about the American Diversity Report, how you created that and kept it going, the podcast, and what work is being done now with that?
So about 16 years ago, I was doing a newsletter that was a PDF kind of thing that you could print out. And a gentleman from a local newspaper came to me and said, you know, you could really make that go worldwide. And he helped me create it so that it was online. And you're talking 16 years ago. Fortunately, I've had quite a career regarding computers. And I was fine with it because it got hacked with death threats. And he told me that I would be fine doing it by myself. And so I did. And for 16 years, we have been publishing articles by diversity experts from around the world. But not only that, but articles that impact the community, the workplace. They make a difference. What we call in Hebrew, tikkun olam, repair of the world.
Now, dance has also been a big part of your life as well. You founded a Baroque dance company. I hope I get the pronunciation right. Is it Harlequinade?
Harlequinade, yes.
Harlequinade. Yeah, can you tell us a bit about that?
So I started dancing almost as a toddler in Bermuda and came to America, and I hated it here at first. But my mom took me to see some ballet in New York City, and I fell in love with this city, this country. My goodness, incredible talent. And I kept going. Okay. Now, the history of dance was fascinating to me. It started out with Renaissance dancing, which they had a little company in town. We lived in Cincinnati at the time. And we performed together with the Renaissance dance. And then they asked me to take over the Baroque period because I'd had quite a bit of ballet background. And off I went. And I studied, wrote even my very first academic journal article on Baroque dance history, and created this beautiful dance company. It was wonderful that my mother-in-law actually created the costumes for me because I can't sew. And off we went. And I have always been a dancer. I even have taught dancing in a blind school for the blind and a school for the deaf. It's just a passion and has been forever.
How important do you think, Deborah, how important are the arts in spreading understanding about diverse cultures and backgrounds?
Well, I think there's probably no better window into a culture than through the arts, whether it's music or painting or dance, or architecture. These are the ways that a culture expresses itself, and people can resonate to it, and we all do. Think of your favorite music, right? And when you think of your favorite musicians, how many different communities they might come from that you're not part of, but you love their music. That's part of diversity training right there.
Boy, and then we talked about this on the show many times, that when you travel, you develop an understanding. When you see other parts of the country, other parts of the world, and then maybe the next best thing is reading, because of the ability that has to open your eyes to what other people are experiencing in their lives.
Oh, absolutely. Travel has been part of my life. I've been, besides Bermuda, I've been to Europe and Uzbekistan. That was interesting. And it changes you. It gives you a broader view of the world and of humanity. And it's one of the things that young people often do, you know, through college organizations, programs, you know, to get that sense of a global mindset and be able to use that for the rest of their lives.
Deborah Levine's new book is Bunny Bear Adventures in Diversity Land. Deborah, thank you for all the wonderful work that you've been doing for so long, and thank you so much for making time for us. It's been wonderful to talk with you this afternoon.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Deborah Levine with us on Downtown.